This is the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at www.commonwealthclubofcalifornia. I am Ann Clark, a member of the Commonwealth Club and chair of the Environment and Natural Resources member-led forum. Our program tonight is San Francisco International Airport, a leader and worldwide model for environment and sustainability, with John Martin, director, San Francisco International Airport. John has been with the San Francisco International Airport for 35 years. He has served as director for the past 20 years under four San Francisco mayors, and that truly must be a miracle. Frank Jordan, Willie Brown, Gavin Newsom, and Edwin Lee. He has helped grow the airport during his tenure to become the seventh largest airport in the United States. Just last year, SFO welcomed a record 50 million passengers, and I know there were a lot because I went to the airport several times. John is retiring this summer, and before he leaves, we wanted to hear from him how he managed the incredible growth in the face of stiff competition from other West Coast and Bay Area airports. More importantly, how he managed to do this while creating at the same time one of the most sustainable and greenest airports in the United States. John has a very deep-rooted commitment to holistic interconnectedness, something that he believes and I believe in strongly. So it was great pleasure that I introduce you to John Martin.
Thank you, Anne. It's a real pleasure to be here at the Commonwealth Club and to be among so many friends. So tonight I'm going to speak about my 35 years at San Francisco Airport and 20 years as director, and with the emphasis on our sustainability programs. It's been an incredible journey for me personally, and one I'm enormously grateful for. Since I announced my retirement, many of people have asked me what I'm most proud of at SFO. Without question, it's the team that the airport has built around simultaneously leading the nation in growth, innovation, and sustainability. Henry David Thoreau famously said, "What's the use of a fine house if you haven't got a tolerable planet to put it on?" Wise words for today, too. So we've forged ahead with environmental sustainability, and we've enhanced, not compromised, our passengers' experience, as well as a quality of life for our employees and for our neighbors. We've reduced greenhouse gas emissions by 38% since 1990, even as passenger traffic has grown by 40%. Remarkable, 38% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. We've ensured that non-city, the company employees at the airport, are paid fairly and receive good benefits. 12,500 employees who benefit from our salary and benefit program. As a result, we have a highly skilled and trained workforce at the airport. For the last 8 years, we've been one of the fastest growing airports in the U.S. and one of the fastest growing in the world. And as Anne said, we're now handling a record 50 million passengers annually. To put that in perspective, that's 60 times the number of people who live in San Francisco. So our sustainability efforts are not heroic. They're really just simply about making a commitment to treat people fairly, making a commitment to being a responsible steward for the environment. At the end of the day, we all want to go home to our kids, our grandkids, and say we did our part to help save the planet, to be able to say we've done our very best. That's a measure I like to use. From my perspective, the nation's lagged far behind. A lot of missed opportunities over the last 25 years in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So sustainability is at the heart of our mission. The aviation industry loves acronyms, as you may know. And one of the acronyms for sustainability in the aviation industry is EONS, Economic Viability, Operational Efficiency to Achieve a Competitive Airfare and Air Service Environment, Natural Resource Conservation, and Social Responsibility. So let's start with economic viability and operational efficiency. We're in a very strong position. The airport generates $1 billion a year in revenue, entirely financially self-supporting, no taxpayer support. And we actually pay a dividend each year to the city general fund. Most recently, it was $41 million. And over a 30-year period, it's totaled $560 million. Pure profit to the city. There's 33,500 people who work at the airport. So we're virtually a city unto ourselves. And we have a large capital program underway. I'll share that with you in a few minutes. That will produce 2,500 new construction jobs as well. Way back when I was only 39 years old, I started at the airport. I started as director, 1995. At the time, I was the youngest director in the country for a big airport. We had a $3.5 billion program at that time, and it was the biggest public works project underway in the United States at that time, virtually building a new airport on top of an existing airport. The program included the new international terminal that was completed in 2000, becoming a new icon for the airport for San Francisco, a new elevated roadway system, a BART extension arriving right at the front door of the international terminal, four new parking garages, and then the new AirTrain people mover system. And we accomplished this all using a new model of collaborative partnering to bring together contractors, airport employees, tenants to create a vision and deliver projects on time and within budget. And we've continued to follow this partnering model successfully over the years. So back at that time in the late 90s, San Francisco and SFO were flourishing. I thought the good times would never end. But boom, a lot of things went wrong. So some of you are old enough to remember. Dot-com crash. Then 9/11. Then the SARS epidemic that especially hit the Asian countries. United, which handles 40% of our air traffic, filed for bankruptcy and restructuring. We were hit hard. SFO lost 37% of our passenger traffic over a year period. We dropped from 40 million passengers a year to 26 million passengers a year. When I got together with other airport directors from around the country, they referred to me as the Job of airport directors. Everything that could go wrong went wrong in the worst possible way at my airport. But I didn't lose faith. I had faith that things would get better, that we were doing the right things in treating our employees fairly and ensuring environmental sustainability standards were met. So you may also remember this time. All of a sudden, security lines got a lot longer. Remember, you used to have your bag screen in the lobby of the terminal buildings before the bag was even checked. And at that time, too, we really lacked competition. So airfares skyrocketed. Back in 2003, routine fare to Washington, D.C., even 3 or 4 weeks ahead of time, $5,000 for a round-trip fare. We were one of the highest airfare airports in the country at that time. And it hurt the economy. It hurt the airport. It hurt the economy. Hotel occupancy rates dropped significantly in San Francisco as well. You may remember, too, that services seemed to decrease at that time. All of a sudden, passengers had to start paying for a luggage check, for food, for entertainment, things that used to be taken for granted as freebies when you flew. So as I said, we continue to insist on treating our employees with dignity and respect, not backing off our wage and benefit requirements. And we took four important steps, however, to recover. First, we worked on cutting costs. We had to quickly cut costs like any private business would. We cut 30% of our staff. Tough decision to make. Fortunately, the City Public Utility Commission was starting a large capital program, and they picked up many of the staff who otherwise would have been laid off. We developed a new strategic plan and set a bold goal to reduce airline costs 35% so we could be more competitive with other airports. And we found new sources of non-airline revenue, and we started a very aggressive marketing campaign to attract both low-cost carriers as well as new international flights. And on a personal note, I learned the hard way that I needed to work harder to make sure we had low-cost carrier competition. Competition is really key to our success. If we'd had that competition earlier, we would have been able to weather the storm better. So it was a lesson learned. And incidentally, this is one of the key things I look for in any new management hire, is a willingness to acknowledge mistakes and learn from mistakes. So over the next several years in that time period, 2003, 2004, 2005, we really focused on attracting new international carriers, which are the biggest revenue producers for us as well. And since 2007, we've added 25 new international carriers. Amazing, 25 new international carriers. More than any other U.S. airport has added in that time. And in the last year, we were the fastest growing airport in the country in terms of international passenger traffic. It's running up almost 15% year over year. And the international traffic is more than just accumulating bragging rights. There's really huge economic benefits. A single daily flight to Asia creates 1,300 new jobs, $138 million a year in new revenue for the Bay Area. So the numbers are astounding. So we put great effort, make a big investment, sometimes 5 or 6 years of marketing efforts to attract a single new flight. But it pays off big time for SFO and for the Bay Area. So in those days, too, those dark days, we were focused on increased low-cost carrier competition. And we competed to get Virgin America. Four other cities were competing. A lot of people said Virgin America will never pick San Francisco. A lot of experts, so-called experts. But we won out. And it was a great victory for San Francisco and a perfect fit. Virgin America, fun, innovative, focused on guest services, simply cool, like San Francisco, perfect fit. And it was a game changer for the airport, a game changer for San Francisco. The day that Virgin America announced they had obtained the FAA approvals to begin operation, that very same day, Southwest and JetBlue announced they were starting service as well. Love competition. So we saw great benefits. We had an independent consultant conduct a study a few years ago, found that every market that Virgin America or Southwest starts from San Francisco, airfares go down 25%. So this is New York, Washington, D.C., Boston, Seattle. Markets that are heavily traveled already. But with their competition, fares drop 25%. The carriers already serving those markets add frequencies, and the number of seats sold goes up 22%. So 25% reduction in fares, 22% increase in passengers. So a word about the recent announced sale of Virgin America to Alaska. I had a chance to meet with the Alaska Airline representatives just last week. As I told them, I've always loved Alaska Airlines, but now I love them even more. So I met with their senior executive team, and they're very committed to the San Francisco market. I can tell they're going to love being in Terminal 2 and they're committed to continuing to grow the service and add flights, just like Virgin America was planning to do. So besides the international and low-cost airlines, concession stores, the retail food and beverage facilities, are also major revenue producers for us. And in fact, we are one of the very top airports in the country in concession sales on a per-passenger basis. In 2015 alone, concession programs generated $130 million for the airport and employed 4,000 workers. So another key aspect of our strategy that few people know about, and it's a pretty unique aspect to the way we run the airport, that we finance, own, and control all of our own facilities, not the norm in other cities. And this is really a key aspect to our operation, because at Chicago O'Hare, at Newark, all of the gates are locked up under long-term leases. So Southwest can't get into Chicago O'Hare. Took years for Virgin America to get a single gate at Chicago O'Hare, years to get into Newark. But because we control our facilities, we can reallocate the gates on an annual basis. I was able to assure Virgin America when they started operation that as they grew, we would be able to provide them with the gates they needed to be successful. And I could do the same for Southwest and JetBlue. I could do the same for the 25 new international airlines that started at the airport. So this open and fair competition that's served by our control of facilities has served San Francisco incredibly well. And preserving this open and fair competition is one of the most important charges for the next person who follows me as airport director. So on to natural resource conservation. The city has set very ambitious goals for sustainability, and we're committed to meeting and exceeding those goals. We want to go beyond. We want to have big, hairy, audacious goals, BHAGs, as Jim Collins refers to them. He referred to them that way in his book, Good to Great. It's required reading, actually, for my senior staff. So the big, hairy, audacious goals for the airport on sustainability. These are goals we look to achieve by 2021. Zero greenhouse gas emissions. We want to be green carbon neutral by 2021. This is a big, hairy, audacious goal. But if we put our minds to it, if we believe in it, if we work as one team, we can deliver this. Zero waste. Zero energy. So the concept of getting to zero drives all of our new building projects and our operations. In the last year, too, in response to Mayor Lee's direction and the drought, we've reduced water consumption 22% on a per-passenger basis. And we're well ahead of the city's goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 25% by 2017, with our having already achieved that 38% reduction. In the year 2002, 14 years ago, we were at 51% recycling. We've increased that dramatically. We're now up to 80%. So I'm confident that we will get to 100% in the next 5 years. So we have made big investments on the environmental side, but we realize savings too. And overall, we're continuing to realize net savings from these investments.
This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is San Francisco International Airport, a leader and worldwide model for environment and sustainability, with John Martin, Director, San Francisco International Airport. John?
Thank you. And we're working to install in the next 2 years a gray or recycled water system that will meet the entire needs of our 1,125 toilets airport-wide, as well as our entire landscaping needs as well. So what is remarkable is that we accomplish these audacious achievements without sacrificing design and without sacrificing the guest experience, and without sacrificing our financial performance. So we're making big investments from the ground up. That's how we're doing this. We're making investments from the ground up for design and construction. We have a $3.2 billion in construction projects that are designed to go beyond LEED Gold, beyond the industry standard. LEED Gold is just the minimum at SFO. We do want to aim higher. So a word on T2. Everyone loves Terminal 2. Has everyone here been inside Terminal 2? Anyone not been inside Terminal 2? It's the American and Virgin America Terminal. I like to think of it as my baby because I got to see it through from design through completion. So Virgin America, American and Terminal 2, and T2 really reflects San Francisco. Large, airy spaces, light-filled, cool living room furniture, fun amenities, the very first yoga room in the world. The Bangalore airport director got in some hot water with his commission for not having had a yoga room first. High-end restrooms, and all the great local restaurants and shops that we think of as being a part of San Francisco. And we didn't look to what other airports were doing. We looked more toward what 4- and 5-star hotels were doing in downtown San Francisco. We wanted to go outside the box on what an experience can be like inside of the terminal building. So it's been especially rewarding for me to see the reaction and continue to hear the reaction of the passengers using the terminal building. One highlight for me was from the New York Times. After the terminal building opened, the Times said, "The word delight, joy, and flying do not usually appear together in the same sentence. But Terminal 2 is returning some of the long-lost glamour to air travel." Love it. So, of course, both the International Terminal and T2 set the bar very high. And we're determined that the rest of our terminal buildings will exceed that standard, that will go even further, both in terms of environmental design and in terms of the customer experience. In the past 2 years, we've reopened Boarding Area E, new Boarding Area E to serve United Airlines in Terminal 3, again up to that T2 standard. We have a consolidated central checkpoint, an airy, spacious terminal with new San Francisco restaurants. Of course, serving United Airlines, it accounts for 40% of our traffic. United continues to be our most important carrier, continues to be very aggressive in adding both domestic and international flights. I believe this year alone, they're adding flights to 4 new international destinations. Many of you have probably seen our new air traffic control tower, a new icon for the airport in San Francisco. It will open for service this fall. Next up for us, a new 350-room 4-star Grand Hyatt. Very exciting to finally have this right in front of the international terminal. It will be served by our AirTrain system. A new Terminal 1, a new 24-gate Boarding Area B is a part of that. We'll start to open in 2019. And then we'll do a refresh of the international terminal. All of these exceeding that LEED Gold standard. So a word on transit. We have the highest transit ridership already of any airport in the United States. And we spent $200 million to bring BART to the front door of the international terminal. Just a couple years ago, the BART general manager and I entered into an agreement, kind of a bet. BART agreed to waive the $3 employee surcharge, $3 surcharge for all of my employees riding BART, for all of those 33,000 employees who work at the airport. They waived that $3 surcharge each way, and I agreed that the airport would cover any losses. And my airport commission was willing to go along with me on that. And we both won. Ridership increased so much that even with the elimination of that $3 surcharge, BART is realizing more revenue. So AirTrain was another big investment. The AirTrain primarily serves a rental car center, and the rental car customers cover the full cost of that AirTrain system that's allowed us to eliminate all of those rental car buses that are such a source of pollution at many airports around the world. Every day, we have tens of thousands of vehicles moving around the airport. About 5,000 vehicles stationed just at the airport, owned by the airport and all of our tenants. We've done a lot of work to make those vehicles clean, sustainable. All of our off-airport parking operators, off-airport rental car companies, off-airport hotels have gone entirely to clean buses, following our requirements. It says what could have been done on a national level with some basic requirements. San Francisco has been aggressive with taxi cabs. 91% of the taxi cabs are green today. Interestingly, now for our commercial vehicle traffic, 50% of all commercial vehicle trips are Lyft and Uber. It's amazing growth in a short amount of time. They're moving to green vehicles. I know that's their plan, but they have a ways to go, and I hope they'll get it done sooner than later. My own staff, the city employees, developed an app, first of its kind in the world, to track Lyft and Uber trips. And that's now generating $15 million a year for the airport, a significant source of revenue. So a couple minutes about airplanes. Of course, airplanes are probably the biggest sources of emissions at the airport. First, the newer planes are dramatically cleaner, more fuel efficient, have higher seat load factors. And the airlines squeeze a lot more people on planes than they did 20 years ago, as you probably know for yourself. But that does improve fuel efficiency. Beginning with the international terminal in 2000, we outfitted every gate with ground power supply and preconditioned air. So the aircraft essentially plug in to our power rather than running an auxiliary power unit engine. And that's saving 7.6 million gallons of jet fuel a year, 75,000 tons less greenhouse gas emissions. So it's good for the airport, it's good for the air environment, and it saves the airlines money. So a next dramatic goal, a goal for me personally, it's something I hope will be picked up by my staff after I leave, is to get rid of plastic water bottles at the airport. They're a big source of revenue. Probably 3 million bottles of water sold at the airport a year. So you can imagine a lot of revenue, but that would probably fill several cargo hangars at the airport. And Hetch Hetchy water is pretty unbeatable in its cleanliness and quality of water. About 7 years ago, I myself gave up buying plastic bottled water when I travel. I use a reusable container when I travel, and I struggled getting it under the drinking fountain. So that's when we started using hydration stations at the airport. So I don't know what the solution will be, but I hope that we'll find a solution that we can eliminate plastic water bottle sales. San Francisco's managed to get rid of plastic bags. Hopefully we can do the same with plastic water bottles. So let's talk a moment now about social responsibility, how we serve and act to serve our communities. My first week at the airport 35 years ago, I was mentioning to someone here tonight, I was brand new to San Francisco. I didn't know a person in San Francisco, but fell in love quickly, and 6 weeks later I knew I'd never leave San Francisco. But on that first day I arrived at work and I didn't have a desk. And an engineer came by and said hello, and he noted I didn't have a desk. And an hour later, he had a desk delivered to my office. Really sweet. So it showed that commitment, that pride, that willingness to connect with other employees. And that started to really develop my sense of ownership, my sense of pride in the airport as well. And over the years, I've come to recognize that employees do their best when they, too, feel that sense of ownership, when the airport shows that it cares about employees and insists that all employees be treated with dignity and respect. When employees are inspired by a mission-driven organization, they take pride in their work, they go the extra step, and they challenge themselves to aim even higher. And we work hard to keep our employees informed. 2 days from now, I'll be presenting the State of the Airport Address to all 1,800 employees at the airport and present pins for every 5-year increment of service, an important way to stay connected to our employees. I saw firsthand the benefits of a committed staff on July 6, 2013. When Asiana Flight 214 came in too low, too slow, and crash-landed, short of the runway. I arrived in less than an hour after the crash to the Emergency Operations Center, and I was amazed and really moved. I'd never felt such pride in my staff and the airport team, everybody working seamlessly together to save lives, police, fire, airport staff, airline staff, TSA, FBI, and all trying to work to get the airport reopened as fast as possible. We had airplanes coming in from Europe and Asia, counting on being able to land at SFO. The traffic never stops. It was truly our darkest day, but at the same time, I never felt more proud and never saw more clearly the benefit of teamwork and a very committed staff. So what's a more typical day like for me? Now I have a desk, but I don't have a desk job. Airport director is not a desk job. I like to spend at least an hour a day walking around the airport, checking out the back corners, connecting with my staff, connecting with tenants, answering questions from the passengers, seeing where they may have trouble with directions, hearing what they need. I like to stay very hands-on with the airport operations. When I first started these walks 21 years ago, I really explored the back corners I hadn't seen before, stairwells, back rooms, and I found employees sleeping. They weren't sleeping and taking a break from their work. They were sleeping between jobs, working 2 full-time jobs, getting a rest in between, getting paid minimum wage on both jobs. Then I learned that our frontline security personnel, the screeners, then under contract to the airlines, so before TSA, they earned 20 cents more than the minimum wage. And in 1999, for a newly hired screener, the average stay at the airport was 6 weeks. Can you imagine? They're protecting us, turning over every 6 weeks. The last straw for me was around this time, a truck driver driving a fuel truck who was working 2 full-time jobs fell asleep. Fortunately, no accident, but that was it. We had to take action. The Airport Commission approved a new quality standard program, unlike anything else in the country, that set training, equipment standards, compensation standards, and benefit standards, even before the city had a minimum compensation ordinance. The program has been expanded now to include 12,500 employees at the airport. They now earn $14.10 an hour, a wage people can get by on. Many people still work second jobs part-time, but at least I no longer have workers working 2 full-time jobs at the airport. And incidentally, when I go to other airports, I can step into a restroom at that airport and tell whether the airport is paying the custodians fairly. You get what you pay for. If they're being paid a minimum wage, the cleanliness is not there. So our custodians, we pay well, and they do an incredible job. We really have one of the cleanest airports in the world. Our model, this quality standards program, the first of its kind, has been followed by Oakland, San Jose, LAX, Seattle, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and other airports around the country are looking to follow this program. So did paying people more make us weaker? I often hear this argument that it hurts the economy to pay people a reasonable salary. Not at all. It's absolutely not true. We've been the fastest growing airport in the country, as I've said, for the last 9 years, even with these salary requirements. It's interesting that in the last 2 years, I met with 2 CEOs of major concession operators who have worldwide operations. And they both had essentially the same comment. Worldwide, our best workers are at SFO. really powerful statement, something to take pride in. And then, but gee, the salary requirement sure is high. Well, guess what, Sherlock? There's a connection. So another part of economic sustainability is to provide a benefit to the community around us, to be a good neighbor, to help grow the economy and help businesses grow. So today, 52% of our food and beverage and retail leases are owned by small and local businesses. I'm especially proud of this. It's been a very big change from where we were 20 years ago. Airport construction projects, 50% participation by subcontractors who are women and minority-owned. It's really unsurpassed in the industry. I'll just give you an example of one small business that I'm very proud of at the airport. Marina's Cafe, which is in the rental car center. Lupe Rodriguez, one of the owners, immigrated here from El Salvador in 1990. Worked as a cashier at the airport, worked her way up to become a manager. And then George Issa immigrated from Egypt in 2000, started an airport restaurant as well, worked his way up to be an assistant manager, and then Lupe and George met and married in 2010. And then they opened in 2013 Marina's Cafe in the rental car center. So a true American dream. So our internship program, something, again, I'm very proud of. My first job in the aviation industry was at the Boston Airport, an internship while I was in graduate school, and I decided to move from public transit to work for airports. Good move, and so I'm grateful for that internship that opened me to this industry. So beginning in 1996, we introduced three major internship programs. And since that time, we've had 1,500 interns at the airport, high school, college, postgraduate interns. And especially pleased and proud of a Career Connect program. We bring in at-risk youth from San Francisco, many of them coming right out of homelessness, prepare them for jobs. Many of these youth end up working full-time at the airport. Remember one youth who came on, she was homeless when she started this program. 6 weeks later, she was making $38,000 a year as a security screener at the airport. Great success stories. So what are the biggest threats to SFO's continued success? First, mergers and acquisitions and loss of competition. There's been a lot of airline mergers, and there's a lack of competition nationwide. Fortunately, we've been able to preserve competition at SFO, and because we control our facilities, we're able to do that. Second biggest threat is a corporate culture driven by shareholder value. So I've had a front row seat for this for the last 20 years to see the changes. And no question, businesses are stronger, but it's often at the cost of the workers and sometimes the cost of the taxpayers. It's been a big shift in responsibilities from airlines to airports and to federal agencies over the 20-year period. All of the legacy airlines in the last 20 years have filed for bankruptcy. And they all got court approval to walk away from pension obligations. $28 billion in pension obligations. Four of the 10 biggest pension defaults in the country's history have been with the airlines. So it's interesting that in the last 3 years, the airlines have really turned the corner. They've made $43 billion in profit in the last year. It's an interesting comparison. Airlines have increasingly contracted out for baggage handling, aircraft maintenance, fueling, cleaning, check-in operations, seeking the lowest possible costs. Unfortunately, one of the places I'm most concerned about on safety is the ramp area around the terminals where many of the workers work. We've really stepped up the training for those employees, requiring that they be properly trained, expanding our quality standards program. We've also started inspecting all of those 5,000 vehicles on the airport. We used to just count on the tenants being responsible to maintain the vehicles. Now we have to inspect city staff, inspecting every vehicle at least once a year. Fortunately for air travelers, travel has never been safer. The airlines and the FAA have done a phenomenal job in making air travel safer than it's ever been before. So the third threat, political interference. There's nothing more damaging, more demoralizing to city staff than political interference. And I've been very fortunate in my 20 years as director that I've had elected officials who trust the airport staff who don't interfere. But if I look around the country, look at the poor performing airports, airports you don't like probably, pretty good bet there's too much political interference at those airports. So that's one of the things I will advise San Franciscans in power to continue to follow the model of not interfering. Fourth threat, climate change, rising sea levels. We're right above sea level. But we've been responsible, and we're prepared for this. We've raised the seawall around the airport. About two-thirds of the way around the airport, we've raised the seawall 48 inches. So within the next 4 to 5 years, we will have fully raised the seawall around the entire perimeter of the airport. So I think we're ahead of the curve compared to most of the Bay Area. So how do we push forward? It's my dream, my direction, that within 5 years, SFO will be carbon neutral. We'll get to zero, zero waste, zero energy, zero emissions. That all commercial vehicles coming on the airport will be green. So these are certainly bold goals, but they're practical, and they are achievable if we really put our minds to it. And as you can see from our experience, they ultimately make good business sense. Making a profit is one of the signs of a success, and certainly SFO does that. But it is a narrow outlook. SFO is successful most of all because we've created a culture of excellence. We treat our employees with dignity, respect, make sure they're paid a fair wage. We provide opportunities for local-owned businesses. And we genuinely care about our communities. We recognize that our individual and collective actions to protect the environment matter. There's no pretending otherwise. Every single action matters. So going forward, we want to continue to lead the way. We want to revolutionize the airport experience for passengers, for the airlines, for the environment, for the employees who work at the airport, and for all of the business owners at the airport. We've learned that SFO employees like being a part of something great. It inspires them. So in conclusion, SFO is a team committed to providing an exceptional airport in every way. I'm grateful to have had the opportunity to serve SFO, to serve San Francisco, as airport director for these many years. Thank you.
This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is San Francisco International Airport, a leader and worldwide model for environment and sustainability, with John Martin, Director, San Francisco International Airport. Now it's time for our audience questions. The first question, John, is, you've made a real difference for working people at SFO, for which we are grateful. Are you learning what advice, or, oh, are you leaving what advice would, as you are leaving, as you are leaving, what advice would you give to the next airport director?
Thanks, Anne. I would certainly give the advice to the director of aiming for the very best, never accepting good enough. We've always aimed to be better, to be the best, and to also support, inspire the employees to help create the goal, the vision for the airport, to keep them informed and treat the employees with kindness and respect so that they fully embrace the goal and vision for the airport.
This next question is probably something every person in this room has thought at one time or another. How's that? What are you planning to avoid a return of delays?
Okay. We still have a fair amount of delays. I think in general we're doing better than we were a few years ago. The FAA has employed technology that in part 10 years ago wasn't possible because the controllers and pilots were not yet comfortable with it. But that technology now allows us to have simultaneous use of our parallel arrival runways, even in low cloud condition. So on a normal clear day, we can handle up to 60 landings an hour. A peak hour is around 45, 46 landings scheduled per hour. On a very bad weather day, or on a cloudy day, we used to drop to 30 landings per hour, just simply having clouds. So that's when the delays would occur. But with the use of the new technology and an offset approach on the parallel runways, we're able to get 37 or 38 landings per hour. So it really improves our arrival performance significantly overall. We still have delays, but not nearly as bad as I would have been. A couple other key things that are being done is that the airlines are upgauging. The airlines are flying larger aircraft. I'm particularly pleased that the 30-seaters, those very small aircraft, are entirely gone from SFO now. And the airlines have gone to larger aircraft. They're also getting more people on the planes. So 30 years ago, load factors were about 62%. Today, they're around 88 to 90%. So that also improves our efficiency. I think there'll continue to be some additional improvements in technology in the coming year, but we'll always be an airport that has some level of delays.
Renewable energy production opportunities at the airport. Is that possible, and how?
So I think within 5 years for renewable energy, you'll see every building covered with solar panels, every single building. So our Hetch Hetchy is a very clean source of power, but part of our goal to get to zero is to produce more of the power on site.
What is your vision for sustainable low-carbon food, low-sodium food, and low-sodium food at the airport?
So we do have a requirement at the airport. We started this in Terminal 2, and we're now carrying it airport-wide to incentivize and encourage the food and beverage operators to use locally produced organic food whenever possible. My vision of getting rid of the sale of plastic bottled water, in many cases the water is being shipped hundreds of miles or thousands of miles. Water doesn't need to have a carbon footprint. So we do encourage our tenants to have healthy food. And I think just by virtue of having so many San Francisco restaurateurs who are in touch with this market, they're offering more and more healthy options. As a result, too, we're seeing the benefit. In Terminal 2, we get $15 in food and beverage and retail sales on a per-passenger basis on average. People know they can get good food, so they get off flights and have a meal at the airport before they go on. Or they arrive early knowing they can get a good meal at the airport, maybe take another meal on board the plane with them, maybe have time for a massage as well.
Oh, I love the idea of massage, both getting on and off the airport plane. Can you get that going faster? Would you explain more about the 558 acres of wetland improvements? Where, why, and not at the airport?
So as a part of our master plan back in the 90s and projects that have continued since, we took some wetlands areas. In some cases, it might be questioned whether they were wetlands, but there were birds where we had removed fuel tanks from the ground, hole in the ground, water accumulated, became a wetland. But we didn't argue that. We recognized an opportunity to mitigate the master plan, make investments in restoring wetlands in other areas, and we're very proud to have contributed that to the Bay Area, helping to restore Crissy Field. There's another lake on Mountain Lake. We're especially proud to have helped fund the cleaning and restoration of Mountain Lake. So that's what the wetland mitigation was for.
Wow, that's very impressive. Is SFO giving up your non-TSA, TSA? And I'm going to add to that a little bit. I was in an airport recently that had a picture showing how many people from our U.S. Army and other forces have actually gone on to be TSA employees. Mm-hmm. So let me sort of slip that in. Okay. And I was amazed, actually. So there's two questions. Is SFO giving up your non-TSA TSA? And what's your idea about the Army and the Navy and everyone producing people who can go into jobs with TSA?
Okay. Well, a little background for those who don't know that when TSA was created, a few airports were given the option, four airports could select to go with a private screening company. We decided to go with a private screening company in large part because having a quality standard program already in place where the workers were paid fairly well, we felt that we had a good screening workforce and that they would be picked up by their private screening company, and that's what happened. So over the years, we've continued to use that private screening model. The contractor works for the TSA, not for the airport. We simply choose to go with a private screening model. Over the years, they've done a very good job. They test very well against the TSA nationwide. We're very happy with the level of customer service. Right now, around the country, SFO compares very well in having lines that are relatively short, even though we have fast-growing passenger traffic. So we'll likely continue with that model. Military personnel are a great source of employees, both for the TSA, for operations jobs at the airport. Many of the air traffic controllers at the airport also came out of the military. So you'll see disproportionately at airports a large number of ex-military people, a very important source of hiring for us, people who have real hands-on experience and are ready to go.
Great. Can you encourage other airport directors to work in partnership with their union workers?
Well, we hold that up as an example, a quality standards program. As other airports have considered going to quality standard programs around the country, we've sent airport staff to Philadelphia, Seattle, Minneapolis, St. Paul to share our experience, and it's a positive experience. So we think in that way we are encouraging that, but we've always enjoyed a very good relationship with labor, not only on the operations side, but on the construction side. We've had a project labor agreement in place with construction unions since 1996. So in my entire time period as director, we've never had any serious labor disruption that stopped construction work.
Please speak further about the fair competition that SFO enjoys as a result of owning the gates and traffic. Is the addition of low-cost carriers and more international carriers at the detriment of the legacy long-term carriers such as United?
It's certainly for the benefit of the airport and for the benefit of San Francisco to have lower fares and more competition. Imagine San Francisco today if we didn't have Virgin America. If we didn't have a philosophy of controlling our gates and being able to assure Virgin America that they would be able to grow, we'd be like Chicago. Maybe we'd be lucky to have a single gate used by Virgin America. Maybe we'd be lucky to have one gate used by Southwest. Maybe or maybe not, we'd have JetBlue. So airfares across the board to major cities would be 25% higher than they are today from San Francisco. So it's possible someone might argue, well, that hurts the existing carriers who are already here. But my job is to serve San Francisco. My job is to make sure that fares are low and that there's good competition. And really, it is probably one of the very most important tasks for an airport director is to keep the airport open and competitive. Many airport directors around the country haven't succeeded. It can come at a cost to the community. And it's not easy. There's a lot of pressure to do otherwise. Director really has to stand firm in making sure that competitive environment is allowed to be maintained.
This questionnaire asks, would dynamic carbon accounting be something valuable to the
upcoming 5-year strategic plan. How does data science in-house fit into future goals and sustainable reporting?
Okay. Goes beyond my level of technical competency. And we're bringing on, we have great environmental staff already. We're bringing on additional staff. And I wanted to mention on the last question, too, for international traffic, we manage the international terminal, so it's entirely common use. So a carrier, an international carrier, can come into the airport without making a single dollar in investment. They share a ticket counter. They share the gate rooms. The baggage system's already there. So with minimal investment, they can test out the market. If by chance it doesn't work, not a big loss in money for them. And generally, we've been amazingly successful with the 25 new international carriers that have come on board.
This question is interesting to me because in the environmental world, it has the word elephant in it. It is not my question. You have great sustainability goals. Yay. Is the elephant in the room? What about those polluting monsters, airplanes, that are not in your net zero calculations? Planes give out, is the word I'll use, 100 times more greenhouse gases than buildings.
No doubt planes are a major source of greenhouse gas emissions. While the airlines have made big investments in new planes, they're much more fuel efficient. They're realizing the more efficiency on load factors, which is helping as well. I think nationally we probably want to look to do more, and airlines are beginning to test use of alternative fuels. Something I'd love to see happen is an alternative fuel facility developed near the airport that could serve airlines at SFO, so that would be available at least on a test basis. United, I believe, is beginning to use an alternative fuel from Los Angeles, from LAX. So we hope that we'll have that kind of facility in place at SFO in the coming years.
You have that wonderful position of being able to see the past, the present, and the future, we hope. All of us hope that, right? What do you see as the airport and air travel of the future?
So in the future, I would like to come back to the airport in 5 and 10 years as new facilities come online and see that the team has truly revolutionized the passenger experience, that every airport in the world is once again looking to SFO as a model for air service, for air services for passengers, that we will have been successful in being zero and getting to zero, and that we will continue to have an extraordinary team of employees who are committed to excellence and doing the very best for San Francisco. So that's what I envision most of all. I do kind of on a more detailed level. I think it'll be really interesting to see how electric cars serve the airport. We're designing our new parking garage so that cars could be parked bumper to bumper, stacked, so that if passengers are dropped off of the terminal by an electric car, they can park themselves bumper to bumper in our long-term parking garage. And we're designing it as well so we can come back at a later date and provide electric hookups to the cars that will all be electric in the future. So it's the way we're trying to anticipate some things that might happen.
That's really, really interesting, and I think a wonderful way to go. That's amazing. We have come into a part of our program tonight for our last questions. Actually, there are two. One is, do you have a favorite destination when you travel?
Many favorite destinations.
Name one or two.
I haven't been there in a while. I love to go to Italy, the northern Italy. I love going to Healdsburg and driving my car and not having to get on an airplane. Love West Marin County. My first trips will be car trips after I retire.
in your work as the director and as from when you first came, what outside of work has been your most memorable experience?
What outside of work? Yeah, well, I love living in San Francisco. It's, you know, I really feel blessed to live in San Francisco, such a great city. And over the last 16 years, I found a Buddhist meditation practice and do several weeks of silent meditation retreat practice a year that's really supported me in my position. And I will be teaching Buddhist meditation in my retirement.
Mm-hmm. This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight has been inspiring and informative. It is the San Francisco International Airport, a leader and worldwide model for environment and sustainability, with John Martin, director of the San Francisco International Airport. A big thank you to John Martin for all his years and work at our San Francisco International Airport. Thank you, John. Happy times and happy journeys ahead. Let's give John a big hand.
Thank you. Thank you.
And many thanks to our wonderful audience here and on the radio and the internet. You can find our programs on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. Click on commonwealthclub.org. Also, for multimedia access to programs, current news feeds, streaming audio, radio schedules, and 230 radio stations on national radio networks. Also find audio and video tapes and free weekly podcasts and archive programs. Look for our upcoming Voices for the Environment programs. This is the coming to the end of our spring programs, and let me tell you what lies ahead. Wednesday, April 27th is an April update, the El Nino effect, California water, snowpack, and drought. And a most recent report about the status of our water is out now and is being reviewed. And a panel of experts will discuss where we are now at the end of April and what summer might hold with the most recent information that we have. So look forward to Wednesday, April 27th, the April update on water. Thursday, May 12th, Claire Brown, professor of the Graduate School of Economics at UC Berkeley, we'll talk about the necessity of creating quality of life for a sustainable global environment. Wednesday, May 21st, Charles Curtin, Senior Fellow for the Center for Natural Resources Environmental Policy at the University of Montana, will talk about the science of open spaces. He will have a book signing. And our very last Voices for the Environment program for spring 2006 will be Monday, June 6, Adriana Quintero, Director and Founder, Voices Verdes, and Director, Partner Engagement from National Resources Defense Council, will talk about environment and climate action priorities for Latinos and Latinas. Please join us at the upcoming programs that we have. Again, this is Ann Clark. A real thank you to John Martin for this wonderful program tonight. I'm Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. Thank all of you for being with us. This meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California is adjourned.